Hey, welcome everyone. Welcome to the First Name Basis podcast, where we chat with industry leaders and innovators about what's going on in the times of today. And this is a remote edition podcast. I'm super pumped to have someone that I've been working with and chatting with for about the past 2.5-3 years now, who heads up one of Canada's largest organizations at RBC. So welcome to John Stackhouse, SVP over at RBC. Welcome, John.
Great, thanks, Chital. I'm not sure I head up anything, but we can get into that.
You know what I like about you? You do a lot of different we could be explicit here also, but
yeah.
You do a lot of different things. So I envision this conversation you and I are going to have is going to touch a lot of different areas. But having said that, what do you do at RBC?
Yeah,
it's the famous question everyone asks. What does John actually do?
Yeah, it really depends on the day, and I only get worried when my boss asks me that question. Then I'm in trouble. But
if Dave starts sending you an email saying, "John, what are you working on this week?"
You're in a little trouble. Yeah, that's or worse. What do you do here? That's right. You never want your boss asking you that. So I'm so lucky to get to do a whole bunch of different things. It ranges from overseeing our thought leadership, including a great research team that part of that is RBC Economics. So we look at the future of Canada and the state of Canada from an economic point of view, a technology and innovation point of view, from a climate perspective, and from a social perspective through things like diversity, immigration, education, trying to figure out is generally where's the country going?
Sure.
That's one of the, and where should it be going, and what does it need to do to get there? So that's kind of a big chunk of the job, and I'm thrilled to do that. Then I help the bank think about lots of issues, largely outside of banking, and the forces that are coming down on us, and COVID has, I'm sure we'll get into that.
Oh, of course. As you describe your job, I mean, your future outlook right now is going to be super interesting for us to hear about.
Yeah. So who would have thought like 60 days ago we'd have to become experts in like testing protocols and tracing technologies, but you know, helping the bank think about those challenges and helping our clients. You know, we're lucky to have a relationship with, I think it's 14 million Canadians, lots of businesses, big and small. Lots of entrepreneurs and
RBC touches every Canadian in some way or another, whether you're banking with them or not.
I think that's a fair statement. So if in any way I can help them understand these questions, that's part of my job.
Cool. So let's get into that right now. I mean, 60 days ago the world changed pretty drastically. I was in New York City actually, and I was jumping on a flight, and it was delayed and all this stuff happened, but to make a long story short, I jumped on the flight outside of connectivity for an hour and a half. And by the time I landed, it was like the NBA season's canceled. Sophie Trudeau is tested positive. Like it was March 11th, the whole world changed. Like it was within that hour and a half, it was this COVID thing is super serious.
Yeah.
What were some of the things that you were looking at even before that day? Because we did have some lead time to know that this is going to become an issue.
Yeah, no, it's such a great question. And I've been kind of racking my brain to kind of think through where was I and what was I thinking? What was I thinking, especially in those days leading up to it? You know, it was something like 9/11. We all know where we were on 9/11. Yeah. It was a moment and you can define it. This is really different, right? Because it was creeping. There was that March 11th day, if that's the right date, where those sort of confluence or collision of events.
Tom Hanks has it.
That's right.
Notifications on my phone went just insane. As soon as I landed, I went, did I like go into a warp zone? What happened here?
No, that was there was that Tom Hanks moment where I think we all kind of realized this is way bigger. So dialing back, I was actually the last trip I was on was in Alberta and was in Southern Alberta, Calgary, up to Red Deer, and was with a bunch of farmers, cattle farmers, talking about technology and how it's changing agriculture. And then got back to Calgary, and it was like this creeping sense of this is bigger.
Yeah.
Got on the plane, like you, and the woman beside me on the plane had a face covering and gloves on the whole trip. And I thought, that's a little bit of an overreaction.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Really?
You
got that's like two cases in much. This country.
And yeah, and then kind of got off the plane and thought, you know, within 24 hours, that woman, whoever she was beside me, was just kind of two steps ahead ahead of us. And yeah, I think we're all going to need in time a better retrospective on what we saw and what we didn't see coming, because there were some big, and hindsight's way easier than foresight.
Of course. If you go back, it's like we should have, could have.
What should? Yeah, exactly. Like international flights, should we have shut them down sooner? As a business, and these are hard decisions, right? Like, because you're affecting people's lives and the economy more generally.
Even just the notion of work from home. I mean, we were looking at it and we go, okay, Facebook and Twitter did it. We're a tech company. Should we be doing it? But we work together in such a collaborative way, and we don't want to lose that magic. And you know, it was like an eye-opening moment for us when we did it. We said, hey, let's stay safe. Let's go work from home. We know we could. We've done it in the past.
So yeah, it's amazing how this crisis has compressed lots of trends that were already well established, but it's just kind of taken 5 years and put it into 5 weeks. So work from home, I can't remember March 11th. I think that was also the day.
It was a Wednesday.
Was that the Wednesday?
It was the Wednesday night that everything just started.
So it was on the Monday or Tuesday of that week where we said in the office, yeah, maybe we should be working from home, encourage people to start to pack up. And there were other kind of groups in our building from different companies that were almost panicky. Like you could see people rushing off the elevator to get to the GO train or subway, like it was going to be their last chance out of town. And I stayed, I think I was the last person to leave the office. Maybe it was a Thursday. I can't remember the exact days. And it felt eerie, right? It's kind of vacated building. And who knew what we were getting into? And now it's weirdly normal to be working from home. And I've got sort of a core team of roughly 20 people. We have a daily call. It's hard. I'm sure it's harder on a lot of team members than maybe we all appreciate on certain days, but we're figuring it out and it's kind of working. So the technology, we can talk lots about this, but it's been amazing to see RBC, 50,000 people, I think it is, across Canada are now working remotely, a lot of them from home. And that includes call center people, it includes bond traders, includes executives.
Sure.
And
and there's a lot of security and just the logistics of being able to do that. I mean, you know, working with even RBC or working with other financial clients, how many times we actually have to take our staff and go on site to help build digital products? Because you can't be outside of the firewall.
Yeah. So the attacks have gone way up, as you no doubt know. Like the hackers and the cyber villains know kind of points of transition are when you attack. So when you've got people moving offices, if you have, you know, we're at our weakest, what is it, when we're about to leave work or when we sign on at work because we're distracted.
Sure.
The water cooler moments. Yeah. So it's those mental transitions where we're just, we drop our guard. And so I think they figured out, okay, here's a whole society and whole organizations that are dropping their guard because we're just worried about like getting home and staying healthy. So they're attacking more, and you know our counter forces have been really impressive. We're pushing back, we're fending them off, and testing our systems in a way. It's kind of helpful because you learn every time you're attacked and repel it, you learn something.
Yeah.
Your systems get smarter, so they get smarter, but we also get.
But it's always people. It's always the people that need to be trained the best, right?
Like, but it's the people, because the technology. Technology is useless without people in most circumstances. And one of the things we've been learning from our people is just, and this is so much the value of culture. Like if anything has been tested in this environment, more than anything else, it's not security systems, it's culture.
Right.
And organizations, communities, countries, that, and you see this around the world, your culture gets tested. This is the ultimate stress test.
Absolutely.
And we've seen with people working from home, working remotely, man, our culture has really paid off. It's like the technology is great. It's critical, but the culture is critical as well.
It's amazing to see. I mean, we'll talk a little bit about what's happening in banking innovation, because I'm sure at RBC as well, you guys have completely transformed and your innovation pipeline has gone in rapid speed to advance, which is a good thing. But you know, even the people change is huge. My mom works for Chorus and she calls me and she's like, I need to understand what multi-factor authentication is. It's like, no, actually multi-factor authentication is pretty important. You actually do need to understand what that is now.
That's beautiful.
She was doing her online training module that Chorus pushed out to her, which was done
good.
Also, kudos to Chorus. They did a really good job. But I would break it down for her in layman's terms, like what a threat would look like, or here's what use cases can be, and here's another way of saying what the online module is saying, and walk her through it, which is super cool to see. I mean, my, you know, God love her soul. She actually used me for Indian tech support multiple times throughout the day. She may actually call anytime saying her VPN's not working. The fact she knows what a VPN is awesome now too. But you guys are one of Canada's largest employers and you got a huge diverse workforce.
Yep.
And so what was that like? Like dealing with my moms of the world and getting
them on the speed? No, it's been fascinating, and we should get back to VPN, because I think there's I don't know, there's like a Netflix show or something to be done on VPN, because I think like we've all become really intimate with our VPN.
Sure.
And sort of quasi experts at it, but it's when my VPN goes down or one of my colleagues goes down, it's like panic
time. Yeah, our Slack went down last night.
I
had an anxiety panic attack.
Bad.
Yeah, I was like, I can't talk to anyone. What do I email? Who uses email? I figured it out.
Yeah, but the people side is really interesting, because we have RBC is an incredibly diverse organization, from money managers to bond traders, investment bankers, and people running branches in the smallest communities right across the country, in the far north, in downtown Toronto. And so they're all different, and all have come together in really impressive ways. If I can maybe just walk through a couple of examples.
Sure, that's the best way.
The traders are fantastic. I had a great conversation.
Said nobody ever, but it's funny.
Yeah. But I had a great conversation last week with one of our AI algorithm traders.
Okay.
In London, England. So he's a trader, but he's really more of an algorithm writer.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been working with AI to make trading algorithms more and more sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a fascinating world.
Absolutely.
He's had to take all that from, you know, the city in London, where the pipes are as good as any in the world, because you just think of like all the data that's coming into, you know, along with New York, the world's greatest financial center. And he's gone out to his house in the suburbs of London, and hasn't missed a beat. In fact, he had one of his biggest trading weeks at the height of the crisis in his, I don't know technically if it was his basement, but, you know, just for illustration's sake, in his proverbial basement.
You know what I'm picturing? I'm a big fan of the show Billions. I'm picturing Taylor Mason in their basement right now.
Yeah. So it's, you know, so much of this comes down to just humanity at its truest. So his biggest challenge wasn't the pipes or the algorithms. It was having to convince his kid to stay off Disney during trading hours.
The Disney.
So he learned to sort of give his kids, you know, sort of dole out the chocolate and goodies through the day.
Yeah.
He said, like, that's just a traitor at work, right? You're making the ultimate trade. You stay off Disney, sure. I'll give you a chocolate bar.
Well, it and was. Then, it, sorry, go ahead.
No. So we go from that to people in branches, and in the early days in the crisis, there was high anxiety, and a greater demand for money, for cash.
Right.
And people, and it was largely older people. Many of them knew newcomers to Canada, who had probably seen stress events in other countries.
Sure.
Showing up with bags and saying, like, I would like my,
yeah,
I would like my savings.
I like all my money in here, please.
We're like, okay, that's actually not how the system works, but let's try to work through this.
Right.
And then you can imagine being a branch manager in a small Canadian community where you've got a security guard who may also feel a bit of health risk.
Right.
Your tellers who are, you know, need PPE. Mm-hmm. And now we've got all the PPE to
and
them.
Yeah,
but
you guys got PPE. There's, I just went into
it. That shield.
The shield.
Yeah.
Even, and I was surprised, I actually had to go to see a financial advisor. And walking into the financial advisor's office, they had a shield on the desk. And I was like,
yeah,
that's super cool. That, like, very quickly it was done.
Yeah. So he, I mean, it's now again kind of normal, but in those early weeks, we were figuring it out as we went. And you know, just massive kudos to the branch managers, to the branch employees, who stayed in place, came to work every day, as things were being figured out, helped people in those high anxiety moments, people panicking about their money, stock markets are in free fall, feels like the end of the world. People got stressed out about food, and we saw hoarding of groceries in those days. But we also saw the same behavior with finances.
Absolutely. And it was, and with finance, I mean, we talk a lot about the essential workers who are the frontline staff. But I felt like your bank almost becomes your therapist, because you were scared. You were scared. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't know. You may have to do a mortgage deferral, your credit card deferral. You may have just lost your job.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of things going on.
Yeah. Right? No. And
your bank support.
And those were, without trying to diminish for a second, the frontline health workers who've been so extraordinary. Mm-hmm. Our frontline finance workers in banking have been heroes through this, because not only did they go into physical environments when many of us were told to stay out of those sorts of environments, they help people with those high stress moments where their savings were being hit, their jobs, their mortgages, everything was kind of up in the air. And I love that expression that they're like financial therapists. They are. And they managed it really, really well.
So here, while we're talking on therapy, I've always been a big advocate on mental health, and I'm going to take this conversation somewhere else. I've talked about, just personal stories of mine that I've shared, earlier in my career, when, you kind of feel like you don't know what the future holds. A lot of people are actually feeling that right now when they're unemployed and there's some sort of, and there's uncertainty in your life. But something came to my attention yesterday, and I was chatting with a couple of other CEOs, and they said, hey, we haven't realized that isolation has taken a toll on our staff. And there are people in our staff who this isolation has been really hard on, because they don't have anyone else to walk out, that they go out and talk to, or really just feel really depressed and alone as this groundhog day effect of us just being at home all the time has gone through. And we use, and I'll give them a plug, we use a company called Inkblot Therapy, a tribal skill, to give some professional online help to everyone. It's something we've been doing from before. But again, this morning at our stand-up, I addressed that issue, saying, hey, if anyone does feel alone, please go to your HR, come to us, talk to us, because you're not in this alone. Let us try to figure out solutions to make you feel better. With such a large staff as you guys, what have you been doing for you? Because I'm sure you, I mean, if we are seeing it in our much smaller organizations, in your large organization, I mean, I'm sure it's at the top of your list and your CEO's list.
Absolutely. And we're trying to pay constant attention to it and continue to learn And it's important to share learnings with other organizations, because we've got people at stress at scale in a way that we've never had. And mental health is, it's a mystery in so many ways, although we know so much more than we did even just a decade ago. So talking about it is important, being transparent, providing people with resources. So, we've got a terrific employee support program, and continue to try to help people understand that those resources are in place to be used. One of the, maybe I could add some insights that we've gained. One is that, mental health doesn't discriminate between types of people. And especially in stressful situations like this, a top executive is just as likely to suffer from mental health challenges as a frontline worker.
Yeah, it doesn't discriminate. And, it doesn't discriminate.
And it's really important for people in leadership positions who are trying to help people to be able to say, okay, wait a second, maybe I've got to address my own challenges as well. What's that line? Take the oxygen mask first on airplanes. I think that's important for people in senior positions to understand. Sure. And often those are alpha type people. That's how they got there, and they may not want to admit to a perceived weakness. It's not a weakness. It's part of humanity. The other insight that we're trying to share is our environments. This is back to the work from home point. Are also incredibly different and incredibly varied. So we talk to each other, and I see you, you see me, but you have no idea what's going on around me. I have no idea what you're looking at behind the camera. Sure. You may be looking at a child who's competing for your attention. Mm-hmm. You may be looking at an empty place and that reminds you of loneliness. You may be looking at other stresses.
A pile of bills.
A
pile of bills that are stressing you out. Right.
Or a partner who you don't have a healthy relationship with. Mm-hmm. And all these have suddenly become part of your work life in a very direct way. And I think we're all just trying to better adjust to that. And one of the things we've been trying to communicate with each other is that mental health is not just about the employee or your coworker or your boss. It's about also the people around you. Mm-hmm. So, make sure that everyone is healthy, fully healthy.
Yeah, support each other.
Yeah. So support it's not just other. About you mm-hmm. as my coworker there. Whatever we're doing, I've got to make sure I'm not, compounding challenges elsewhere, maybe in your environment. The physical side is also, I think, something we haven't probably fully appreciated. Many people will tell you they're and I see a exercise bike, I think it's like behind.
The Peloton.
Yeah, that's the Peloton, yeah. I didn't know if we were allowed to do like brand references. Yeah,
some brand references.
Go Peloton. So a lot
I'm
of people are
saying, challenge reviewers. I need the motivation.
So a lot of people are saying, look, I've never worked out as much as I do now. I'm healthier, I'm fitter, and that's great.
I'm the opposite, to tell you the truth. I lost my routine.
Yeah, but not everyone.
I roll out of bed, I'm working. I roll back into bed, I'm dreaming of work.
Exactly.
It's taking that's unhealthiness, I guess, in my life.
No, so exactly. So how do we appreciate that mental and physical health have a relationship, and that we're taking care of the physical health as well? Because we're not going to the workplace, which is brings a bit of exercise. There isn't a fitness club to go to.
Sure.
So maybe you're getting more exercise, but odds are also pretty good that you're not. So we're trying to help our employees understand the need to make time, really make time for physical activity, whatever that is, make time. This is something our CEO says at every leadership meeting. Make time for sleep. He's got a great.
It's a great point, but sometimes it's harder to do when you're stressed.
Yeah,
right?
And in fact, I went to last night. I think I was awake for at least an hour after I went to bed, and it was. I've been working up like you, been looking at my screen, then changed, whatever, got into bed, and I was wired.
Yeah.
And just lay there for, I want to say, an hour, and didn't have a good sleep as a result. And his what he likes to remind us is he's seen enough crises. He says people, like in crisis, you compress sleep usually, and you respond worse to the crisis. He said, I constantly see leaders making bad decisions. Constantly. But when he sees people make bad decisions, it is often because they're not in the right frame of mind.
Mm-hmm.
And often that's because they have not slept or taken care of their physical wellness.
Yeah.
So it's important to allocate time for non-work. Like get up at, whatever the time is that you're leaving the office, leave the office. Down tools. I'm guilty of violating that. Make time for sleep, make time for physical exercise.
Awesome. All right. I got some questions coming fired at us. But before we go there, I do this thing during our podcast where people get to know you. So I'm just going to go off the cuff and ask you some totally out of the blue questions. But the first question I'll start with is a softball, just to promote soft small businesses that are suffering right now during this pandemic. So the second things open up, which restaurant do you want to go eat at?
Oh, wow. What a great question. So I live in the Yonge Eglinton area in Toronto, and there's a little family Italian restaurant called Roberto's on Yonge Street that I miss. It's just got like a dozen tables, and I occasionally walk by it. They're doing frozen takeout, so you can order food there, but it's not the same as being in a nice, warm Italian family restaurant.
All right. Speaking of warmth, if you were able to fly tomorrow, where would you fly? Where would you take the family? Or maybe without the family.
Those are two questions. And where would they go? I've long wanted to go. I've only transited through Japan, mm-hmm. and would like to visit Japan. I'd like to go to Europe. I mean, there's so many places I would love to go, but I think Japan would be high on the list.
What are you binge watching right now?
Oh, okay. Truth or
truth. Truth. It could be that show or whatever that nonsense is.
So I've already been through Ozark.
It was really good. That was really good.
Yeah.
That ending was just.
Oof. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying The Last Dance.
I'm loving it. Yeah.
The Michael Jordan Chicago Bulls story, because it's just like crazy dramatic, interesting
inspirational.
Characters.
I find it's so inspirational.
It's also a great and people have written about this, but it's a really good insight into teamwork and how do you build a team. It's a great insight into coaching.
We were chatting with Alfredo Tan, who's the chief digital officer at WestJet yesterday, and we were talking about the line in the last episode where he said, "I may have been hard on these guys, but I never asked them to do something I wouldn't do myself."
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And it really stuck with me.
Yeah. No.
Absolutely right.
Yeah. And then I think one of the, I can't remember the player who said, "Yeah, was Michael hard? Yes. Yeah. Was he a jerk? Yes." But we won world championships. So that's the challenge of leadership.
All right, let's get to some of the tougher questions that everybody I know wants to know. So one of the questions is, what is RBC's outlook looking at the economy coming from now and forward? I guess you could put it in short term and long term.
Yeah, so we're looking at a slow, bumpy recovery that will take us into 2021 to get back to where we were. We think we're coming out of, we like to call it a checkmark recovery, like sharp drop, slow incline. Yeah. Some people are starting to call it the swoosh, like the Nike swoosh. Yeah. So we're largely through the drop. It shouldn't get economically deeper than it is now, although that doesn't mean it's not hard. And then it's a slow, gradual comeback with some ups and downs along the way. So, yeah, it's going to be a grind through 2020. Maybe things start to accelerate in the fall, depending on when things reopen. But we'll still be below water until we get into to 2021. One of our economists said, if you're a home builder and you went from building 10 homes a month to one, you've had a 90% decline. If next month you go to two homes, you've had a 100% increase.
Yeah.
But you're still down 80%. So it's that kind of incremental step back that that we're going to be going through. Unemployment is going to be a real challenge. We're expecting kind of 10%. Ish unemployment towards the end of the year. It's much deeper now, and that's going to become a real.
Hey, would you say the same for the U.S. as well?
Yeah.
The U.S. is in close to 20% right now.
Yeah. It'll come back faster, just because of the nature of the U.S. economy, but it'll be a challenge to come back, and the fall is going to be difficult in different ways because a lot of the supports that we're seeing presumably aren't going to be there. So you're going to have people without, in our case, the CERB, for instance, the Canadian Emergency Relief Benefit.
Which has been a huge benefit for every company that qualified for it. We had John Ruffalo on earlier talking about how it was staged and it probably could have been done better, but hey, it's there right now. It's a huge benefit. Now some of these benefits start to go away. It'd be interesting to see how many companies are still able to afford the staff that they have.
Yeah, and good on John for raising the voice of the tech community conversation. I mean, he was pounding the tables, working the phone.
You should watch the podcast. He was pounding the table during the podcast too. In regards to how deficits are going to start getting overcome. What do you see there? We're spending a lot.
Yeah.
It's going to be generations to come that are going to have to pay this bill.
Yeah. So we've got, we have a good balance sheet as a country and individually we've taken on too much debt, but collectively through the, our governments, especially at the federal level, we're okay. So we can afford to borrow as much as we have, and debt generally is okay as long as you've got good income to pay it back. So the challenge in the short term, well, the near term, is in the next 5 years, isn't so much the debt load, because we think interest rates are going to stay low, so the servicing cost isn't brutal. It's ensuring that we start to grow the economy, to grow out of that debt. It's like if you borrow to buy a house, when you first have a mortgage, it's like, oh my God, this thing is going to it's bigger than anything I'll ever make. But you eat away at it and it takes you 25 years. That's why we amortize over 25 years. With what we're borrowing now, it's going to take us, I don't want to say 25 years, but it's going to take a very long time to pay it back. So like a good homeowner, we need to be methodical, start growing our income and then saying every month, X percent of our income goes to pay down that mortgage, and not to just keep borrowing to build a bigger and bigger house. And one of our concerns, and it's a little early to be raising this in a loud way, but as we come out of this, which we will, and it's not going to be too far off, we've got to ensure that growth is driven not by government spending. Right. But by private sector job creation, by wealth creation. So we need to find ways genuinely to find, to help tribal scale get back to where you were and then double that.
Right.
So, and do that like 1,000 times across the economy. Do it with manufacturers, with food producers, with tech companies, with healthcare innovators. We've got to find ways for you to grow. And you do that through exporting, through talent, as you know. So there's no kind of secret sauce to that, but we're really going to need to be more focused collectively, kind of in that Israeli or Singapore way of just like being obsessive about growing ourselves.
And funding and putting dollars, I think, towards the future is like a key thing, right? Like something John was talking about was like, let's not think in the 4-year election term cycles. We got to actually think, where are we going to invest our dollars today that is going to give us the largest impact a decade from now? Because it's going to take time for that to happen. And that's absolutely where we got to have that. I think, you know, if there's some blessing that can come out of COVID is that, hey, we're all in this together. So let's put all the politics aside. Where are we going to make our investments to help support each other for the future good of the country?
And where would you put the next dollar to make that happen?
You know, I think it's definitely in technological advancements. You know, I think, look, there's going to be a huge sense of nationalism, of being self-dependent on your own country. And I think, you know, even if you just take a look at robotics, and if we were able to invest in Canadian companies that do manufacturing with robotics, you could drive the cost down so you don't have to have China or these other places build your whatever you have in your cars or whatever it may be. So I think there's tons of opportunity in what the future is going to look like for us to go and start investing in that. And let's start not only training our people in that, but let's really start pushing the boundaries of innovation in those areas. And I think that's the manufacturing is just a great example.
Yeah, no, that is a great example. And you know, we can't underestimate the value and power of being Canadian. So if kind of walls go up, that's going to be a challenge, but we're more likely to get into more countries than almost anyone else.
Absolutely.
So, it's a
badge of honor while traveling with your Canadian passport. It truly is.
Yeah. And you've been kind of a model of that. So how, when we come back from this, do we kind of sneak our way back into the US to sell those tech solutions and scale them while at the same time going to the Middle East, going to East Asia, And doing that, we can be the solutions provider to the planet.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's an interesting debate going on right now about corporate real estate. Companies have been forced to go and, they're working from home. So Twitter yesterday announces that everybody gets to work from home as long as they want. Sure, that's great for Twitter. They're able to do that, but many organizations can't do that. However, when it comes to corporate real estate, I think the government has been, it's rolled out a plan, but it's very fuzzy. And most people I know are stuck in these very big leases, and you feel bad for the landlord because they're stuck in mortgages. And at the end of the day, it's going to fall back on your RBC's footsteps, right? Mm. What are some of the things that you think we should be doing to solve this real estate issue that we're having right now? You know, you take Roberto's down the street from you, not open, and having to, even if they do some sort of opening, they're not going to be able to go at full capacity, but they got these rent costs that are going to be over their head. What do you think we should be exploring when it comes to that?
It's important to differentiate in commercial real estate between the kind of the three big areas, which are office, industrial, and retail. Sure. So on the office side, we're a big tenant. Especially in downtown Toronto, we've spent the last number of years kind of compressing more and more people into smaller and smaller spaces because they're just not space.
Yeah, there wasn't space in Toronto. I mean, we were looking at like sub 5% occupancy rate.
Yeah. So it was unhealthy, and now we're going to need to give people more of a physical footprint. Sure. So we're not sure we're going to need less square footage. That's to be determined, but you know, as we do the math, the square footage per person is probably gonna have to grow for most people, so maybe it nets out. We also are hearing from employees and see this in other companies, people want both. Most people don't want to be at home all the time.
Yeah.
And there's a value to being in the office, as you know. So we'll probably have a bit of a mixed model. We're going to have to figure out kind of staging with public transit. Elevators are going to be a real challenge.
I don't even know how we're going to do that. Like,
I think it's going to be like Disney World, where you've got to line up to get on on an elevator. Like, genuinely, it's
going to have to. There'll be somebody with a thermometer zapping your head.
You're not
over a certain temperature.
So it's, and then you got the bathrooms and kitchens and common areas. It's lots of stuff to figure out. But we think demand for office space should all in all be okay as long as the economy is growing. Industrial space is going to continue to be in demand because of like the Amazon effect. Mm-hmm. And a million companies like them just can't. They need space to store to warehouse stuff, mm-hmm. like your Peloton. That should be okay. Real estate is going to be the biggest challenge, and you have to differentiate between the mall and Main Street.
Sure.
So destination malls, long term, like a Yorkdale, should be okay because there's something to a destination. The secondary malls, you think of those kind of lower rent malls, often in the suburbs, we're already in decline. And back to what I said earlier about this is like taking 5 years and putting it into 5 weeks. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing a lot of those malls kind of rethink their future. Now, that's actually not a long-term problem because there's so much demand for housing that many of those malls are being converted into condos, and condo communities or townhouse communities. So that's fine. That helps us in our big cities. Main Street is a bigger worry, and we've seen, and I've been watching the decline of Main Street for a while, and worried about what that does to communities, because if we're all just sitting at home ordering off of Amazon, or selling our stuff through Shopify, it doesn't lead to healthy communities. You need places to walk, those nice Roberto's to go and have a glass of wine or meal with people you know, or a vendor who knows your preference for shoes or shirts or cheese and sausage, whatever you're buying. I'm concerned from a community level as well as an economic level that we got to be careful we don't lose Main Street.
Don't lose too much of it. Is there an opportunity here for an RBC per se, or even the five big banks here in Canada to figure out with some of these landlords, hey, if we could extend mortgage terms that you're already locked into, only if you provide the rent relief back to your tenants? Like, are you guys exploring areas like that?
Yeah, it's interesting to hear from landlords too. So we're having that conversation with clients across the board. There's the formal mortgage relief program, but for any client in distress, you naturally have a conversation with your banker, and no banker.
And you shouldn't be afraid, everyone out there. Don't be afraid, actually.
Yeah, no, don't be afraid.
Don't be afraid. I know there's a stigma attached to it, but the sooner that conversation, the better.
You hear occasionally the bad stories, but 99% of the time, banks want their clients. They need their clients to thrive.
Of course.
So they if you have a good banker, talk to them about how to get back to thriving. And I heard a great talk. It was with John Love, who's a big commercial real estate developer, who said, he's having that conversation, or his team is, with tenants across the board. And he said, we want our tenants to continue. We need them to continue. So we're providing rent relief kind of regardless. Mm-hmm. And most of the good tenants, they're not trying to stiff you. They just say, I need 60 days of relief and I'll pay you back when we get to the other side in a different way, or in some way, and figure that out. And he had a great way of expressing. He said, your good clients, and most of them are good, or your good tenants, you work it out. And everyone's got a tenant or a client, and it's probably true for you as well, who's a bit of a jerk.
Yeah.
And you know what? They were jerks in good time. Of course. they were trying to stiff you. You've probably got clients who don't pay you on time,
of course.
Even when they've got money coming out their ears. It's just who they are.
funny how many times that happens to like smaller business owners like us.
Yeah, yeah.
We're and funding your large corporate balance sheet.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. But
and then in bad times, of course, that behavior is not going to get worse, away. It'll probably get worse. Mm-hmm. So that's, there's no easy solution to that. It's just important for everyone to remind ourselves of the power of relationships and always make sure. It's funny, like before this crisis hit, there was all this talk about stakeholder capitalism and this new capitalism. Shareholder capitalism was dead. Of course, we have to take care of our shareholders, but equally, we have to take care of our clients, our employees, and our suppliers. And the suppliers part of it and the clients part of it was, I found kind of the most interesting part of that equation or quadrangle. And again, I remember our CEO talking about this at Davos, about how important, and these were in the good days, how important it always is in business to ensure that your suppliers and your clients are healthy.
Right.
And take care of them. Doesn't mean sort of throw them freebies, but just make sure they're doing well. Yeah. And then make sure your employees are doing well. Yeah. And then your shareholders will be fine.
It's awesome to see. It's awesome to see, you know, your CEO say that. Jamie Dimon was saying the same thing. He goes, we can't have our suppliers who are helping us, especially in our transformation into digital, go bad. We got to go and make sure their balance sheets are okay.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So when you have that attitude and it's, you know, back to that fitness point, you got to kind of constantly exercise in good times and bad times. You just can't work out on New Year's Day because you're guilty about the binge the night before. You got to do it through the year. If you have that culture of taking care of all your stakeholders, including your clients and suppliers, in good times, it's probably going to help you weather these bad times it's a lot better.
These bad times really show you who your good customers are, who your good
partners
are, who your good clients are. And if you do right by them now, they'll always, I mean, I think it's an opportunity because if you do right by them now, then they're going to be with you for life because they know you were there. You have their best interest when you're talking. Speaking of digital and banking, what are some of the advancements you're seeing? I mean, rapid change, being able to apply online, get government, process government grants, all sorts of things. All this has to be done online now. What are you seeing happening at the bank, this shift that just came overnight?
Yeah, so it's one of those 10-year overnight sensations. Mm-hmm. We, and along with a number of other Canadian banks, have been spending and investing heavily, partners like you, over the years in our digital transformation. RBC spends $5 billion a year on tech and ops. And
I got to raise my rates.
That's that investment has paid off in this crisis because you think of something like the CERB benefits. Mm-hmm. Like that's extraordinary that 7 million people, I think the number is, have done that almost entirely online.
Yeah.
And 10 years ago, like in the last financial crisis, 12 years ago, no one would have thought of that.
Yeah. And you watch the news and you see these poor people in Florida, like running around trying to get applications, like actual printed applications done. And you're like, we've done something right here in this country.
Well, it's the same with our telecom companies who I know we like to beat up, but you know, we've been able to all work and watch and binge from home at an unbelievable scale, in part because of the telecom companies in this country that have built some of the world's best networks.
Yeah.
And absolutely. I remember listening to an executive from one of them say, biggest day for TV watching is the Super Bowl Sunday.
Sure.
And he said maybe 4 or 5 weeks into the crisis, he said every day, 7 days a week, has been the equivalent of Super Bowl Sunday for us, going through our pipes. At the same time, people are streaming, like us, at a rate we've never had before.
They're having their Zooms, their house parties.
Yeah.
Kids are watching something else. It's, everybody's just online.
And we just take it for granted. But like they have, you know, rooms of engineers who are kind of watching, are binging mm-hmm. and saying, oh my God, you know, that neighborhood in Toronto or in Vancouver has got so much stuff going through it, the pipes are going to break. Yeah. And they're able to modulate it. So it's both technical and human skill, engineering skill, that's managed the flow. And then the funny additional part is, while they had the TV and the streaming demand, both at record levels, what they really didn't anticipate was voice demand at record levels.
Right.
He said that like the amount of voices going over through the same pipes was off the charts.
Yeah.
And he said like one of the things that they didn't expect is, you know, Trudeau has his daily press briefing. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, like especially in the early days of the crisis, he would say, call 1-800 whatever for this or that. And like a million people would call 1-800 all at the same time.
Right.
And so they'd see like the pipe sort of fill up with the voice and the data demand. And we've been able to get through this so far without major breakages in our networks because of the strength of our telecom companies. Mm-hmm. Similarly, we've gotten through this enormous transition in banking without anything really breaking, knock on wood here, because we've got a really strong banking system. And you know, those, and I know I'm partisan here, and happy to take questions on that, but I think it's important to remind ourselves that the infrastructure of finance and telecom in this country is a really important foundation, just like the healthcare infrastructure is sure. really important for the country. Our transition, again, it's like 5 years into 5 weeks.
Are you seeing the political will even? Because, you know, we've chatted before about, hey, there's going to be dinosaurs and there's going to be change agents. And like, even those dinosaurs have to become change agents now. There's no choice. But have you seen like in the past 2 months, let's say, that the speed of RBC transforming has more, well, another executive at a big five Canadian bank said more has happened here in 5 weeks, Sheetal, than it has happened here in 5 years.
Yep.
Do you feel the same?
Yeah, absolutely. And we're seeing it from inside and outside. So our customers have changed. Mm-hmm. And while we used to, and this is true around the world, used to, you know, for credit, for instance, you might get 50%, I'm not saying that's an RBC number, but across the industry, 50% beginning to end digital process. Mm-hmm. Now it's up to 80%. And that just, we thought maybe that would take 5 years. It's taken 5 weeks.
Right.
Mobile banking is now getting close to ubiquitous. And you know, go back to that story that I told earlier about people coming with empty bags to the branch for money. Those people are increasingly banking now through mobile apps.
They're learning online. Yeah, because it's just not the right experience even to once you go, it's raining outside, we haven't had great weather, it's cold, you're waiting in a lineup, you got a mask on, you go inside, figure out a better way to do it.
But they've also, and this is sort of where the power of our survival gene kicks in. So you have a lot of older clients who never contemplated online banking or mobile banking. Mm-hmm. And now they're afraid to go out, or they can't. They're isolated in place. And so, you know, with the help of their kids or grandkids or caregivers, they figured out online banking or mobile banking. Mm-hmm. And now they're comfortable with it. And they get, hey, I don't need to go to a branch just to get cash.
Right.
So that's the outside experience. Inside, we thought we were pretty good at innovating. We thought we were the best in the country and tried to be among the best in the world in financial digital innovation.
You guys actually did. You spend a lot of time and you spend a lot of energy on consumer behavior, on making sure the experience is consumer centric. A lot of other organizations, I won't even pick on some of the big technology consulting companies out there, just kind of go and get the job done and at the expense of consumer, of being consumer centered. And RBC is really pinpointed on, hey, we got this, everything surrounds our customer. And so let's
absolutely. And one of the things this maybe it just puts us closer to the customer, but one of the things we've learned in this crisis is the ability to scale mobile agile development approaches. So we always kind of thought, yeah, you could do kind of distributed agile, but we prefer to do it together because you need the whiteboards and the sticky notes and just the power of people being around each other. And now you can't do that. And we're realizing you can do it this way.
You can still do it. Yeah, there's cool tools you could use and you can leverage a whole tech stack to still be, I mean, nothing beats having a healthy debate around a table in a boardroom. Especially when you got the sticky notes out and you're having a great, I mean, I love it, right? Like when you're having a great workshop type session. But hey, we're figuring it out how to be able to do it using, there's a lot of cool different tools we're experimenting with also. We should compare notes on a different show on how you guys
are doing. But so it's both inside and outside we're accelerating, and we think that's kind of a net positive, especially for the client.
And then when it comes to innovation, you guys have been really good at venturing out into the startup community and trying to help startups come behind the firewall per se, like to engage with RBC. Are you starting to see that accelerate, is innovation going to be more, I hate to say the word, outsourced to some of these startups where you guys can say, hey, come in here and like we can do it? Or are you starting more grassroots types of engagements to try to build it in-house and have it homegrown?
I challenge the word outsource because innovation has got to be.
I couldn't think of the right word.
Many companies do. They use a different word, but they do try to outsource innovation. So we have a few approaches and always try to see it as collaborative. Mm-hmm. So that means working with startups on shared problems or sharing a problem and trying to solve it. We bring and through something called RBC Ventures. We've got many companies now literally in-house. Some of them kind of move formally in. We have business partnerships with them or we take a stake in them and they try to solve problems for us. But they're more, RBC Ventures is about growing, kind of moving the boundaries of our business, taking us into different spaces. But back to your point about the client, it's always about working with the startups to understand where our clients are going,
right,
and where we need to be to best serve those needs, and maybe they know how to do that, or they can figure out how to do that better than we can. But usually we're collaborating on that, and then we have our own labs, including our AI labs, in many different centers that have more freedom to experiment, to test, to try things, and they're all thriving, working day and night still on kind of a different set of challenges in this environment.
That's awesome. John, I know we're at the top of the hour. Thanks so much.
Wow, that blew by.
It blew by. Thanks so much for joining me. I wanted to end off, before I end off, just give you a last chance to say anything you want to our viewers and everybody tuning in.
Well, I want to encourage people, if I can, to listen to our podcast, which is called RBC Disruptors.
That's right.
Just go to your favorite podcast platform, search for RBC Disruptors. Last episode just dropped yesterday with David Skok, the founding editor of The Logic. We had a good chat about where Canadian innovation is going. Please have a listen. And if you like it, subscribe. The other, if I can leave anyone or leave any other point, is especially thanking people who are leaning into this problem on the front lines or even from where they are. We've got deep challenges and it's going to be a tough year, but it's so encouraging to see how Canadians work together. And we have lots of disagreements, and I'm sure we've all made mistakes through this crisis, but I'm so heartened to see how this country pulls together. We think about the common good. We try to help each other. And if things get tougher, let's not forget that. And if and when things get better, let's not forget that, because absolutely, we've got to make sure everyone's along for the journey, and we all share in those opportunities.
Absolutely. John, you're going to have to take me to Roberto's when we can. I'm going to hold you up to that. You
know what
I was thinking? I was thinking that, hey, we're doing this remote edition of the podcast. We should have the restaurant edition of the podcast where we have a little camera come with us to our favorite restaurants and do kind of like an Anthony Bourdain show in the next phase. It'd be great.
As long as you don't make me cook. Just don't make me cook.
We're not going to cook. Well, you and I will take the drinking part and the eating part. We'll let the cooks do what they do best. John, thanks so much for joining us. Once again, you can catch John and the RBC podcast, which is called RBC Disruptors. Check it out. You can catch First Name Basis on Spotify, Apple, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, a whole bunch of platforms also. But thanks for having us, John. We got to do it again.
Thank you. Thanks so much. Stay well. Stay safe.
Thank you. Take care.